Welcome back to What's Ailing America, the ultimate in reality radio with information that can save your life. On this show, you will not only learn what is ailing America and the world, but you will also learn to recognize the patterns used by the predators controlling our world, and you can recognize them because they wear yarmulkes. The ability to understand and see the big picture is a critical skill necessary to formulate the solutions we need to escape the living hell we find ourselves in. Regarding healthcare, this became self-evident to me in 1999 when I created the Big Picture of All Diseases, which is the first diagram that you can find on both of my websites, reversingvaccineinducediseases.com and drcarly.com. As it turns out, the combination of various assaults on our immune system is what has caused the symptoms which the medical mafia puts into boxes named diseases, and then prescribes drugs which cure nothing but cause further side effects. And I strongly suggest that you go to either one of those websites, reversingvaccineinducediseases.com is the easiest to navigate. Click on the vaccine-induced disease tab, print out those diagrams, listen to the lecture of me in Chicago in 2008 explaining them, because the first diagram, which I call the big picture, is the cause of all disease on one piece of paper, and of course, no one in the medical mafia has been able to refute that truth. And once you realize that we are being poisoned and killed intentionally, then of course the first thing you have to do is learn how to avoid the poisons and to detoxify those you've already consumed. That's what I teach people how to do. If you're interested in getting a consult, click on the services tab on reversingvaccineinducediseases.com and you will learn how I do consults. But the most important thing we have to do is stop the psychopathic predators who are causing this hell that we find ourselves in. And my biggest frustration is the fact that the title of my show, What's Ailing America, of course, I will never run out of answers to that question. I've been on public access TV as well as internet radio for about 16 years now, and I still haven't run out of answers to that question. So the obvious solution is to basically shine a light on the ones who are causing the problem, and there's more and more of us doing that, despite the fact that it's called hate speech to talk about these monsters. That's not working because, of course, the truth is the truth. And confronting the Luciferian psychopaths who call themselves Jews with their own documents, especially the Talmud, Kol Nidre, and Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, is what will wake up the mind-controlled masses as to their plan to kill off and enslave what they call Goy. If you think my work is important, please tell others about the show. You can support my work by donating on the PayPal buttons of either of my sites. You can help friends or family who are too ill to face reality by getting a consult for them and helping them escape from the medical devils, including this new monster called a hospitalist. If you didn't hear my show on RBN last Sunday with Marty Oakley talking about this new monster that's in the hospital who takes over for your attending physician once you're admitted and basically does a wallet biopsy to see how much will your insurance cover, how many assets do you have. They keep you in the hospital as long as possible, appoint a guardian to steal your house, your assets, whatever you may have. No gold or silver will not save you, folks. You really need to listen to that archive from last Sunday. It's on the Light of Day Radio Show.com. Or you can access it on republicbroadcasting.org, because this is a new monster I did not even know about since I left the hospital system in the early 1990s. You can contact me by emailing me at drcarly@gmail.com or calling me at 828-294-0662 between 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time any day of the week. My toll-free number, which works from anywhere in the U.S., Canada, or the Caribbean, is 888-321-6751. If you get a strange message that the number's been disconnected or whatever, have the operator dial it for you. My Skype username is drcarly1, but I use Skype primarily for international clients and radio shows. So if you can contact me by the toll-free number, please use that instead. I do not sit in front of my computer, you know, all day. If you have questions or comments during the show, you can call in at 208-935-0094 or toll-free at 888-747-1968. However, we do ask that listeners not use the toll-free number to listen to the show. You cannot access the archives for this show anymore on the lightofdayradioshow.com. You will have to pay $20 a month to access the archives on the microeffect.com, and that's how you can support this network. One of the most important things you can do to protect yourself and your loved ones from the organisms being created by the mad scientists at the over 1,300 biowarfare labs in the U.S. alone is purchase the Silver Lungs Colloidal Silver Generator. Go to the link section of reversingvaccineinduceddiseases.com to learn how to obtain the silver generator I recommend and use personally for myself and all my pets. And please, people, do not buy into the mind control of the mainstream media about how the flu vaccines are running out. The flu vaccines are giving you the flu. So instead of getting the flu injected into you or sprayed up your nose, if I were you, knowing that I do not give medical advice nor practice medicine, but if I were you, I would take colloidal silver every day. And if you get a severe infection of your lungs, you can breathe it as well. Of course, I was hoping that Daddy Bush would drop dead. Apparently, he was discharged from the hospital after spending weeks there for his infected lungs. But the good news is they didn't give him any colloidal silver. So apparently, you know, they're getting ready to take that monster out. On today's show, my guest will be a very popular guest on my show, J.B. Campbell. I'm not going to go through his whole intro. I've done that many times. As far as I'm concerned, the most important things you need to know about J.B. Campbell is A, he started the militia movement, and B, he wrote a very important book, The New American Man, which I obtained the last copy off Amazon. I'm hoping perhaps he'll consider reintroducing it as an e-book or something. And the only suggestion I would make in the book is to change it to say that it's for men and women, because apparently, you know, we're having a hard time finding men with testicles large enough to do what has to be done. But one of the most important things that Bruce has come up with is this idea of DAJA, Defense Against Jewish Aggression, which I love. This is an excellent idea in terms of going up against the ADL and B'nai B'rith and all the other monstrosity organizations who are pretending to protect the poor Jews who are being apparently attacked by the anti-Semites, who in reality are people that have done their homework and know what these people without conscience have done. So on that note, I welcome you to the show, Bruce. Take you wherever you'd like to go.
Well, thank you, Rebecca. I appreciate that. You know, it probably ought to, it doesn't hurt to go over this militia thing just briefly, since you brought it up. Sure. As you know, I don't use that word. I don't promote the militia at all anymore. I did that for a reason back in the 80s.
Right. It's also important to let the listeners know why you don't use that word anymore, because the whole Murray Building thing was highly involved in trying to blackening that name. So take it away. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. That's how easy or how easily something can be destroyed or used against you if there's no education, if there's no depth behind a movement. I started this thing called the militia, the modern militia movement. Obviously, the militia is not something anybody can start because it was an historical thing. dating from before the revolution. It was just a fact of life. For some reason, they used this French-sounding term, militia, back in the old days. And it came to mean men between the ages of 17 and 45 who were not members of the military. They were called the militia. I only use that word because I didn't really know much more about the word than anyone else back in the 80s. I wrote the manuscript of that book you mentioned in 1983 during Reagan. You know, a little drink of water. And of course, in those days, people would kind of, you know, they'd look at the manuscript when I was trying to get this thing going. I said, what are you doing? We don't quite understand. What is this militia thing you're doing? So I just kind of stumbled on it because I wanted to start a school for young men. You know, that was kind of my idea back in the 80s, something to teach them about chivalry and how to treat women properly and protecting women and and children. So a friend of mine back east said, "Well, you can't do that. Nobody would send anybody to your school. You know, who are you? You'd have to write a book to kind of explain what you had in mind." A book. I thought, "Wow, I can't do that." But so I started researching a little bit and thinking about the Second Amendment, because when I was in college, I was in a political science class, and a student raised his hand and asked this communist who was teaching us, it was a course on government administration. I was a political science major, I'm sorry to admit. Anyways, the guy said, doesn't the Second Amendment make any law against gun ownership? Doesn't that make them illegal? And this professor said, "Well, now wait a minute. The Second Amendment says a well-regulated militia being necessary, blah, blah, blah." Well, we've got the well-regulated militia. It's the National Guard. And the National Guard has guns. So, no, I mean, the Second Amendment is being observed by the government. I thought, wow, that's an interesting twist. I better think about that. And it took me about 20 years thinking about it. When I finally started writing this book or doing the manuscript, I thought about that guy, Joe Crowley, professor who became the president of the University of Nevada at Reno, where I went. And I thought, okay, well-regulated militia, what does that mean? So I started looking up all the cases on in the U.S. Code annotated from 1847 through 1980. On federal cases on guns. There was only one Supreme Court case, but the rest of them were all just federal appellate cases. There's about, I don't know, maybe 80 of them or so, but some of them were combined, so there were probably about 60 or 55 altogether. But in virtually every case, the judge would say that this gun that this guy had, the reason he was in court, on trial for his life, pretty much, you know, was not protected under this well-regulated militia thing. So I came to realize, and I came to hate the militia. The whole idea of this militia thing sounded to me like a trick. It was a two-edged sword, the Second Amendment. because it was used against us as often as it was, you know, the one good phrase in there, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Well, that would have been perfect. But they had to jazz it up. They had to put a gun-grabbing loophole in there, this well-regulated militia. Well, there's no such thing as a well-regulated militia. I was then forced to read the Constitution, which I'd never done. I never cared to do. And I found out that nobody is authorized to regulate the militia. How can you have a well-regulated militia? Then some of these guys say, "Well, that's not what it means. Well-regulated means, you know, well-supplied, well-officered, blah blah blah." No, does not. In those days, words had meanings,
right?
And the meaning of regulation had to do with regular army. The Army and the Navy were regular. They were subject to regulations. Well, the militia is voluntary. There's no regulations involved. Anyway, that's why I started this thing called the militia. I jammed it right up the government's rear end. They never saw it coming. I was trying to create a revolutionary cadre to overthrow the government. That's my entire purpose in the 80s, 90s, and today. My purpose is to overthrow this stinking, rotten, malignant government. So the militia was meant by me to become offensive. It never got there. All we could do was collect guns and ammo. That's as far as it got. And the idea in my mind was to differentiate between men and women, because in the 1980s, the unisex drive was trying to obliterate the differences between men and women. And it was pretty damn successful. So I took it upon myself with this book to point out that the militia, you know, for whatever you think about it, right or wrong, it was men only. And I was trying to get men to become masculine, because they were really sliding into feminism. And feminism, of course, is not anything to do with women. The idea behind feminism is to make men effeminate. That's what it really means. So I was trying to counter that. And, it was actually kind of successful in that regard. Men who said, I'm in the militia, you know. Well, there's no militia to be in. The militia was a state of mind. It was nothing to join. And anybody who tried to turn it into some kind of a organization was falling for the federal Jewish version of it, the Oliver North version of it, so that could be controlled. I was just creating a state of mind, a militant state of mind, and a masculine state of mind, and an armed state of mind. Okay. So today,
if I could just interrupt you, Bruce, I just want to say that I totally concur with everything you're saying. But what you're calling the unisex movement, I would call the feminist movement, which I'm totally against. The feminist movement is how they tried to bring women in to basically debase men, to take away their masculinity, and to do things to further destroy the family. People have asked me if I'm a feminist, and my answer is a gigantic no. No. That's just one of the many things that they've done to destroy the family. And I just wanted to point out that I would use that word feminist instead of unisex. But they're doing all these things at the same time. And I do understand that that's the reason that you wrote this book and addressed it to men. I'm just saying that there's a lot of women now that do realize what's going on, and that unfortunately a lot of the men are not being protectors. But I must say that of everybody I've ever interviewed, anybody that I know, you are the one who is motivating the men to get their, protectorism, whatever you want to call it, back. And that's what has to happen. They have to start protecting their families, their homes. That's their job. And I can't wait until more men take over that job. And I just want to read one thing quickly from your book. That I love from the last page of the introduction. You say, what really is this despised international socialism for which the group, which obviously is the Jews, is responsible? You call them the Rothschild Rockefellers earlier on in the book. Orwell called it a boot stamping on a human face forever, forever. And that is what we're seeing. And it's getting worse every day. And that is why now is the time, in my opinion, and I know that you can feel it too, that people are starting to know this is not a joke. We can't wait for the quote-unquote authorities to save us, because they're basically the ones doing it. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just trying to beef up the masculine nature and remind men of what they're obligations are as mm-hmm. men, is to protect women and children from evil men. Of course, I now have to include Hillary Clinton. We're now kind of, the jury is out on her. The book is good. It has a lot of good research in it. It's got some pretty fiery language. The FBI came to my house in Montana and said that it was a very disturbing book, very hard book. I said, well, you guys are a bunch of stone killers. You really left me no choice. I said, he killed those people in Idaho. killed all those people down in Texas. I know damn well you blew up the Oklahoma City building. And you leave us no choice. You got some stone killers on your side. I said, we do too. And we're ready for you guys. Well, but unfortunately, the Oklahoma City atrocity, which was done by them, worked. It was very effective. There was no depth to the militia movement. There was just guys collecting guns and ammo and saying, you can have it when you pry it from my cold, dead fingers. That's not what I wanted. Still, it was enough of an unexpected movement, an armed voluntary movement. Let's face it, that was the biggest, fastest-growing armed voluntary movement probably in history. I mean, especially in this country. I know we can't really count the Confederate deal. That was a state's deal. This was private. Now, as I say, the book is good. It probably should be, put it on online for free. I just don't want to promote the militia anymore, and that book does that. I want to do what you're saying. It's no longer a men deal because, as you say, men have not really covered themselves in glory, and a lot of gals are just as tough or not tougher. So,
So let me just make a suggestion. And I'm not saying to do it for free. You can do an ebook and charge for that. I mean, you have to live as well. But you can write like a pre-intro and just say, this is a book I wrote way back when. And now I would like to say I no longer promote the word militia, but instead the resistance. That's all you need to do. And then, let the reader substitute the word resistance for whenever they say militia. That's something you could do very easily. People need to have access to this book because this, I'm telling you, I have listeners all over the world, and the people that hear you speak, you are basically, I don't know, you're like a pro-testosterone thing. Your voice is getting the men activated again, and that's what we need. And that's why I love having you on the show, because we must do something. And especially now, more and more school shootings and all the crap going on, this whole Sandy Hook thing, it's ridiculous. People are putting on the internet that there's been websites 3 or 4 days before the shooting to get donations for the victims of Sandy Hook. The governor of Connecticut went on the air and actually said that he and his lieutenant governor had been getting ready for this event before it happened. I mean, how many things do people need to see and hear before they realize this was a false flag done intentionally so they could do exactly what they're doing and start going after the guns? Why are they going after the guns? Because the people are waking up. And especially with these bioweapon vaccines coming out and the chemtrails and all the rest of it. Eventually, when enough people wake up and realize they are paying for their own genocide, if they don't stand up and do something, then what are they? I don't know what the answer is to that question. Slave work units, mind-controlled robots, but they're definitely part of the problem. So this is a very important time. This year, there's going to be some stuff happening even more and more, I'm sure. And that's why the people are buying guns. Because even if they don't know about you yet, they smell a rat.
Yeah, I'll say. I think these are, very interesting times. Maybe that's the Chinese cursed version, but they are very interesting times. And I think it's what I've been working toward for like 3 decades now, trying to get us into this frame of mind. I can feel just as you can that there is the stirrings of revolt and revolution. Now, I'm a revolutionary. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I believe in the original American way of revolution against tyranny. So along those lines, I think we need to simplify this. Our constant task is to simplify this thing so that we can be understood. And it's getting easier and easier now, thanks to these brilliant Obama guys. And I would simplify it to this extent. I would say that gun control is treason. I haven't heard anybody else say this because it's dangerous talk. But it is the truth. Gun control is treason. Anybody in the gun control food chain, from the top right down to the guy that might come to your door and say, we need to look around inside here today, folks, this gets the death penalty. This is what America is all about. And we'd be happy to go into this a little bit more in detail. But gun control means they have something in store for us, some agenda that we don't know about that requires our being disarmed. We know it's a Jewish thing, you know. We know the Jews are behind this, but we've also got a lot of non-Jews in the government that are going along.
Yes. And
anybody who would participate in gun grabbing is your deadly enemy. It doesn't get any worse than this. Anybody who would take your gun away from you has something horrible in mind that requires you being disarmed first. So you can't. Now, I thought I'd made this up the other day, but apparently I had not. Somebody else came up with the idea. What if Africans had had guns back in the old days, whether in Africa or on the slave ships or in the colonies or in the states? Do you think this is too important for
people to miss? Hold on, Bruce. We're going into a break. I want you to start over with this. This is a key point. I totally agree with you. So going to a commercial. We'll be right back after this message, folks. Hope you're listening carefully. We'll be right back. My special guest, Bruce Campbell. And I just want to say that commercial reminded me about, you know, knowing the truth. Yes. Knowing the truth is very important, but you have to act on the truth, people. Just knowing the truth is not going to save you. We have to do something against the psychopathic predators that are destroying everything that matters. And unfortunately, apparently, nothing else is working. Our agencies, our corrupt government, nothing else is taking shape to stop the monsters from doing what they're doing. In fact, all we have are sellouts that are going along with the program. So please continue, Bruce, with what you were saying before the break about where would the African slaves have been if they had had a resistance to what happened to them?
Sure. What if the Africans... See, I worked in Africa. I fought over there, fought terrorism, and I learned the African nature and the history. And the history is one of slavery. You know, Africa is based on slavery, Africans over other Africans, and then the stronger tribes selling their captives to slave traders. But let's just, you know, a rhetorical question would be, what if the Africans somehow got their hands on guns, the same kinds of guns that their oppressors, their slavers owned? Would there have been any slavery anywhere? Any Africans? No, the question is very simple. There would have been no slavery. To get slavery, you have to disarm your victim so he can become a slave. So that's right. That's pretty self-evident that, and I thought it was a pretty slick idea, but I realized somebody else came up with it a few days earlier. Anyway, how do we translate this into today? And I would like to relate something that happened in L.A. when I lived down there for a few years in the early 90s, when I was really getting the militia going.
Mm-hmm.
I was in L.A., and of course, I was under observation by the FBI and the Secret Service, and the Secret Service came to my house and threatened to kill me if I were seen anywhere near George H.W. Bush. They said they would kill me. Bogreitz had sent something I'd written. See, I started a second book called Our Struggle, and actually was sending out chapters to subscribers every month. That's how I got it going. And Bogreitz was on this list. And of course, he turned over one of these chapters about Bush to the FBI. The FBI turned it over to the Secret Service, and the Secret Service came to my place and simply said they would kill me if they saw me anywhere near Bush. And I said, well, you know, I never know when he's coming. I only know when he leaves town. They didn't like the sound of that, but they threatened me again. Anyway, back in those days, they were pretty nerve-wracking days trying to get this thing going. The federal government didn't really know how to react to it. They didn't know if it was a bunch of crackpots or it was actually a possible threat to the system, because it came out of nowhere. But in Los Angeles, we had a lot of crime. I was lived in a nice neighborhood, but there was a lot of crime. So we started this local chapter of Neighborhood Watch. And man, at first I thought it was kind of silly, but then it occurred to me, man, this is a heck of an idea, because we had these magnetized signs, very slick looking deal, said Neighborhood Watch, and you put it on the sides of your car, and you could drive around the neighborhood at any hour of the day, and your neighbors loved this. They loved it because it really brought the crime rate down. But also, see, instead of sitting around the house wondering, geez, is the FBI out there in the street massing for an attack? You just get in your car, put the signs on, and go out and look around. And all of a sudden, your mind is totally relieved. You're keeping the crime rate down. I did have one. I probably accomplished one good deed that I knew of. I was out about 2 o'clock in the morning. I had this old Army Jeep, and I had these Neighborhood Watch signs on the side of it. And I was just tooling around, and I parked and waited. And it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, and here came this gal up from Ralph's, you know, grocery store. And there was a car behind her. And she went up the mountainside to her house, and this car was following her. So I pulled in behind that car a ways back. She got to her gate and had to wait for it to open up. And it turned out this car behind her was full of these black guys that followed her from the grocery store up to her house. And I just pulled in right behind them, showing my headlights on them from behind. They were kind of stuck between her and me. And finally, they, you know, started squirming around and looking around, and put it in reverse, and I had to let them out. So I probably did a good deed that night, but I'm just trying to show the power of this idea. You can take control of this, of your neighborhood, and I'm not talking about crime so much as I am talking about the feds and the cops. You let the cops know who's in charge. You know, we pay these guys.
Okay, but wait, I have to bring up this Trayvon Martin situation in Florida, and now from what you're saying, it makes me realize that was another psyop designed to try to make the community watch groups look bad, because this young black man ended up getting shot, and it sounds like that was a ridiculous situation, should have never happened. But isn't it a funny coincidence that now that's going to make community watch groups, such as people like yourself that go around to, you know, keep an eye on what's going on, that's another distortion, obviously designed to get people to not trust those people, don't you think?
Yeah, well, the Trayvon Martin deal, you know, is going to blow up in their faces now that we've seen the actual photographs of George, what's his name, that got the hell beaten out of him, got bloodied pretty bad. And his nose broken by this young man.
Right.
on the cusp of his, you know, all this garbage. But anyway, I'm just saying that this whole concept of Neighborhood Watch empowers us. You know, we live out in the country, so we don't have to worry about that too much. We got some real tough guys around here. Preppers, you know, they're called. Yeah. But in the suburbs and in the cities where we also have to live, we need to take control of our lives. And I think this is an excellent way, based on my experience. I really highly recommend it. And, we don't care what how they slander us and how they smear us. We're going to take charge of this thing. We're the boss. We pay the bills. And we'll decide, you know, what is right and what is wrong. The police.
But if I could, I just want to ask you, Bruce, these people that have been, you know, trying to intimidate you and all the other stuff that they've done, which is a joke, because what I call you is like the nation's real man, and I wish there were more men that would basically, you know, get a set and do what you've done. But there must have been some of those people in the FBI or whatever the case may be who actually were like urging you on. Maybe they couldn't even say anything to you, but they wish they could be you. Because if they're real men and they care about freedom and their families, how could they not be behind what you're doing? Did you ever get any indication, you know, were you ever contacted on the sly or whatever by any of these people who said, you know, keep doing what you're doing or whatever?
Well, in 1990, I was asked to go on a speaking tour around the country to promote the book, which had, you know, been out for a little while, but it was catching on pretty good. So I got an invitation from a group in Chicago, and I went downtown. They put me up in a hotel, and I went down to the meeting room to address these guys. And I'd had some kind of hairy experiences coming from, I'd stayed with that guy that was on the USS Pueblo, Lee Hayes, the radio man, those guys that were captured by the North Koreans. Lee Hayes was my host in the Columbus, Ohio region for about a week. He put together a lot of meetings, and I was really getting this militia thing going. And my whole message in those days was, we've got to stick together, you know, even though it's a big, big country, and there's probably no way I can come from California to Columbus to help somebody who gets in a jam, but we can take reprisals. You know, this is a concept I think we have to cultivate. If so-and-so in Texas is attacked by the feds, then, well, maybe we can't get down there to help him, but we can damn sure take reprisals in Denver or Seattle or San Francisco and get even. This is the kind of mentality we have to have now. And that's what I was pushing back in 1990. So, everybody knew I was being harassed by the feds and by the cops everywhere I went, being tailed and trying to intimidate me. So these guys in Chicago, listen, you know, I gave my standard let's stick together deal. And I started relating my experiences with some cops and you know, being harassed on the way to Chicago from Columbus. One of these guys said, well, they're not all like that. I looked at him. I said, you mean cops? Yeah. Okay. So I continued on with my talk. And I again criticized the cops. Another guy spoke up and said, well, they're not all like that. Really? I said, I looked at him, and I looked at the other one, and I looked at everybody that was there. I said, excuse me, are you guys cops? And they said, yeah. Wow. I said, I'm talking to a bunch of Chicago cops? Uh-huh. I see. They said there would have been a lot more guys here to hear you, but they were afraid to come down. They were told not to come. Uh-huh. So, yes, to answer your question, there is this tendency, and I think we're going to get a lot of guys in the cops and maybe even in the military. I think we're going to get defectors and real men and real women to come forward and to go against the conspirators and criminals who have been misguiding them for these decades. Yeah. To answer your question, I say yes,
okay.
There are
I want to underline that and put it in a large font, because that really pisses me off. These cops who took a job to protect the public, blah, 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 don't even have the balls to come to one of your conferences. Give me a break. And that reminds me of the doctors who took an oath to first do no harm, but yet are killing their patients knowingly in hospice, in nursing homes, and giving vaccines that are bioweapons. And they don't have the courage to say no to what they're doing. These people are aiding and abetting, period. I have no sympathy for these people. They are the reason that the Jewish program is allowed to progress, because they don't have the courage to stand up and say no. I had a nurse call me just last week, an oncology nurse, and she admitted to me that she kills people with chemo and radiation, and she knows she does this because it's self-evident, and now her daughter is renal failure because of the HPV vaccine. And when I started asking her hard questions, I asked her, why do you participate giving chemo and radiation knowing you're killing people? And her answer was, well, I have to put food on the table. You see, that's one of our biggest problems, Bruce, is all of these people who are selling their souls for cash, who are doing whatever they're told to do. They don't even have the courage to stop killing the people that they're supposed to protect. That's my biggest problem in terms of, you know, trying to make them see that they're aiding and abetting their own destruction, because this destruction is happening on all levels. Chemtrails, poison water, poison food, the list is endless. So I'm glad that some cops had the courage to come to your lecture. But, you know, as far as the ones who didn't, I don't even know what to say. They are just as evil as the ones, you know, making the program to do it all.
Yeah, they're the enablers, which, as we know, they're just as bad as the perpetrators in many cases. They make the perpetrators' jobs easier.
Yep.
So, now I guess we need to talk about a little bit about false leadership. We've got people in this movement who are in it for the kicks, or in it for the power, in it for the notoriety. Some are in it for the money. And I have to say, you know, this tendency to misdirect us and to make things sound worse than they are, or better than they are, for their own purposes, has got to be examined. I think the worst guy on the scene is Alex Jones, and I don't. If anybody who knows me knows that I've never attacked anybody in the movement who's doing anything remotely positive for us or with us. But this guy really got to be looked at. He did this show the other day in New York with Piers Morgan about gun control.
And he looked like a raving lunatic, and that was done on purpose, so that people would look at him and say, this is a Looney Tune, and therefore we have to be afraid of the gun people. That was an obvious, intentional, you know, act on his part.
Yes, it was. And he's been doing this for many years, playing the role. I call him the Jackie Gleason of the movement, because he's very talented. He's very intelligent. I don't know how you measure intelligence, but he's got a hell of a memory. He can dredge up facts and figures. It's probably some kind of a savant kind of thing he's got going. But he admitted to this nasty, passive-aggressive English twerp that he has 50 guns. And we can pretty well figure that he's got a concealed carry license from Texas, because in Texas it's not hard to get. But when he got home, he was so shaken up by his experience of being tailed around by some DHS thugs that he said, I'm going to disarm. I'm not going to wear a gun anymore. I'm not going to have a gun anymore on me, because it could be said that I tried to shoot a Texas cop. So I'm not going to have a gun anymore. Then the next day, he revealed that he was going to get security. In other words, bodyguards. Somebody else carry the guns for him.
Right.
So this is despicable. And it shows the nature of this guy. He's a money grubber. I know people worship the ground he walks on. But he's a real counterfeit guy. Now,
well, not to mention the fact he's been on so many mainstream shows, Piers Morgan, The View. I've seen him on a number of shows. The only reason they allow him on these shows is because he's doing a job for his handlers. You would never be seen on mainstream TV, nor would I. Never. Okay, he's performing a function, and it's just like you said. He's telling people, oh, I'm not going to carry guns now. It's too dangerous for me to carry guns because they're going to make some claim against me. So what's the message to the audience? They shouldn't carry guns as well. Now, who can afford to have a security detail other than Jones, who I've heard is worth over $6 million? And once again, people like us don't make $6 million. But also, how is your security detail going to protect you from Homeland Security? Obviously not. You know, basically, you know, if there's some orchestrated effort against you because you're dangerous to the Jewish aggression people, they're going to try to do whatever they're going to do. Security's not going to help you. So the whole thing is a scam. But I'm glad you're bringing this up because I hope it will awaken people to realize that they're paying Jones for his, you know, various DVDs where he's scaring the hell out of people, but he's not giving any solutions. And now his no solution, in addition to it, is don't carry guns. So what the hell are we supposed to do to protect ourselves from the people who are killing us, stealing our children, stealing our property? The list is endless. What are we supposed to do? What does Alex Jones propose we do, Bruce?
Well, he says he has no proposal because he said recently, we can't get physical. We mustn't get physical. Let them in. Let them rape the women, he said.
Really?
That's what he said. I heard him say it.
Wow.
Just about a month ago. It was pretty sickening. Anyway, this brings up the difference between gun collecting, you know, a guy's got 50 guns, and gun fighting. Now, as I said, with the militia deal, all I accomplished was selling a lot of guns. I mean, I got a lot of guns bought. I don't think it was just me. It was also Hillary and Bill Clinton. They really did a number and scared the bejesus out of Americans, and they increased gun sales like you can't believe, which Obama has even eclipsed now. But in those days, in the 90s, that was the remarkable thing about the Clintons. They got a lot of guns and ammo sold. But that's not enough. The danger, we're never going to be physically disarmed in this country. You cannot collect 300 to 400 million guns. It's just impossible, and especially from Americans. That's the one good thing about the situation is we've got millions, hundreds of millions of guns. Now, the question is, can we be persuaded to use them against these gun control freaks? And that's my mission. That's your mission. That's the mission here, is to make sure we are not mentally disarmed.
Right.
Now, being armed, you know, it's not the panacea exactly. Being armed is not a guarantee that you're going to win a fight. But being unarmed is a guarantee that you'll lose. It's important is the will to win, to defend yourself successfully, to kill the aggressor, you or your loved ones or your friends.
Okay, we're going to a break. I want people to let that statement resonate in your brains, and we'll be back after the messages. Because, in fact, if you do nothing, you are dead, people. It's already happening. Look around. We'll be right back.